Hello, gorgeous.
I would make a great queen because I am so stubborn.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Never take a learning opportunity away from another student. No matter how smart you need everyone to think you are.
I am dancing a bright beam of light.
Teen is your family. You have to protect them from those guys, okay?
Make the money. Don't let it make you.
You had me at hello.
And most importantly, you must always have faith in yourself.
This is I'm Here for the Food.
Hey, everybody, for, coming and chilling with us this afternoon. I am sitting with my very good friends, Shaka, Adele, and Daytuan. Daytuan and... Adele started King Magazine. We've been debating the date that it actually happened, but Day, you probably know, was it November 27th or 29th of 2001?
It was probably 27th, I believe.
27th, I think it was 27th.
Yeah, it was the 27th, because it was the same day Ludacris dropped his album.
Okay.
I think it was like Chicken and Beer.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember that magazine. I was at a party and somebody pulled out the magazine, like in a fucking party, and it had Lila Arcieri on the cover.
No way.
So, yeah, who was the model that was made famous by Q-Tip's video Vibrant Thing. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, ooh, I gotta get on the cover of that fucking magazine. That was the first thing. Everybody was bugging out about this. So,
right.
I've been given a lot of thought to intersectionality, especially since, you know Shaka, Adele knows Shaka, and now I know Shaka, and we all three have our own relationship with him. And what's funny is when the magazine comes out, Shaka, you were incarcerated at the time.
Yeah, I was actually in solitary confinement when the magazine came out in 2001. I was on... the third year of what turned out to be 4.5 years straight in solitary confinement. Wow. And my guys in there, like, they smuggled the magazine into me. Like, that's how I would get, like, the magazine, because I couldn't order them from solitary. So they would just, you know, cats would, like, smuggle them in, sell them, hustle them. But, you know, I was, like, one of the respected guys in there. So the young cats would bring me whatever was hot in the streets, you know?
Yeah, so, thinking about intersectionality and, you know, like how in our lives we meet somebody and it almost seems as if we were predestined to meet that person, you know? And so I've known Adele and Day for 15, 16 years at this point, you and I have a new friendship, and it's almost like it seems like we were predestined to meet all those years ago, that each of our lives were running parallel at a time in which nobody could have known, you know? And so I could never have known that being a cover model on the pages of King, that it would lead me to doing a podcast and having you on as a guest, as a New York Times bestseller. But I want to kind of bring it back to, like, the beginning of King Magazine. And Day, I want you to talk about the purpose of King Magazine, because, you know, at first glance, some people might consider this just, you know, what they called lad magazines back then, you know, guys magazine, a magazine with no substance, that was just an excuse to, you know, have a bunch of scantily clad women flaunting their curves. But in actuality, you realized that there was a massive void in the magazine industry, and it was largely ignoring young Black men like yourself. So, you know, just a brief history lesson as to how, you know, you developed the concept of King and how it came to be about for anybody who might not know.
Wow. Thanks, Mel. Thanks for having us on here too to have this discussion. Mm-hmm. I think like King, a lot of times it may fall into like the whole era of Source, Vibe, XXL kind of thing, and then it's like an extension. And it really started basically off just the idea of saying, like, hey, I'm a young journalist over at XXL. I was assistant music editor at the time. This is like 97, 98. Mm. And the upfront section of the magazine, we used to get a lot of letters. Mm-hmm. And this is before like everybody was using email heavy. So what I would do is after I would do all my editing duties and all my stories, I would take all the different letters that everyone would write in and I would go through them one by one. And Miss Info at the time, she was my supervisor at the time. She used to be like, yo, you're crazy. Why is that? You could go home. I'm like, nah, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to like check what the people are writing about. Yeah. And a lot of times it would be inmates.
Yeah.
They would get the mag and they'll be like, yo, that rapper is ill or this is ill. And then after a while, it started becoming like, yo, what kind of ribs are on Scarface Cutlass? And then it would be like, who's that girl in, like on page 38? She was in the video clip that y'all had. What pants are those? And instead of just having the fashion section of XXL bear all that weight, I started thinking like, yo, it'd be dope if there was a magazine on its own that had that. So,
yeah.
Well, just the lifestyle aspect, not just the music that we were covering. Mm-hmm. And it got shot down. It got shot down in 98, 99. It got shot down. And then 2 years later, I had already left XXL and I was in that whole .com bubble. Mm-hmm. And the publishers, they reached out and was like, yo, why don't we try to do that idea that you were talking about all those mm-hmm. years ago? So mm-hmm. King was born.
Yeah. Adele, I want you to talk about, you know, because they tapped you to be his West Coast editor of King. And mm-hmm. a major part of the magazine that I enjoyed personally as a female reading the magazine, mainly what spoke to me other than, you know, my desire to be in the pages or on the cover of King mm-hmm. was the investigative journalism, you know, the mm-hmm. section called Real Life. I think that was my favorite part of the magazine. And you pushed for this to be a mainstay in the magazine. Like, this was a feature that had to be incorporated into every single issue. Like, talk about that from the standpoint of being like a writer and why that was important to include that in a magazine that features gorgeous women on the cover.
I'm gonna tell you something. First of all, you know, this dude right here, I mean, Daytuan, it's crazy to think back to, you know, just the vision earlier on. You got to imagine, we were, you know, we were 26 years old when we started, you know, King Magazine, 26 years old. And in hindsight, it's crazy to think about the type of impact and the type of influence that we were able to have and the type of, you know, trust that our publisher had in us to go ahead and just, you know, pretty much do us. I mean, we pretty much were allowed to do what, you know, we wanted to do, but, you know, Day just had like a different kind of vision, you know, just coming in. I mean, this is definitely, you know, his brainchild, his baby. And really when you think about the whole idea of how he started, you know, with tapping into the culture by, you know, reading those letters. I mean, that right there says everything. Not only about him as an individual, but, you know, just as a visionary to say, like, you know what? It's one thing to have a feel for what I want to do, mm-hmm. but it was like, nah, man, you know, it's like we also got to listen to what other people want because we wanted, you know, from, you know, hands down, we wanted King to be the magazine that we always wanted, that we always wanted to see. We want to have the type of girls in there that we like to, you know, that like we like to see all the time, type of sports, type of social commentary. You know, just lifestyle across the board, entertainment, cars. But, you know, Day definitely gets, you know, all of the credit for just really keeping his, you know, just eye on what counted most. And we had no idea, you know, that one day, you know, we'd be, you know, coming in contact with someone like Shaka, who received the magazine, you know, in a way that we could have never expected.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, even though we paid close attention, you know, to the energy that we were receiving from these letters, like to meet Shaka years and years and years and years later. And, you know, for him to, you know, go far beyond the typical narrative when we speak with the average King fan. And it's like he came from a whole different space, you know, from a literary space. Like, nah, man, like all of those stories, you know, because we know. He's in there reading that thing cover to cover. We put those gems in there for those who are looking. But, I mean, that's like the highest compliment for someone like Shaka to receive the magazine that we really deliver. Because a lot of people just graze past like the real life section and all of those things on entrepreneurship or social injustice, you know, small right. business features that we would put in there intentionally. But the fact that we know that it got through to a lot of people, man, that means everything.
So, yeah, I mean, Shaka was probably, I want to ask you this. So we just filmed an episode of I'm Here for the Food with Shaka, and we were talking about his book, Righting My Wrongs, Life, Death, and Redemption in an American Prison. I am letting you all know now, this is a book that you need to purchase. His episode, there, the links to purchase the book are there. when we were talking about, you know, you being incarcerated, I had a light bulb moment when I was thinking about the role that King Magazine played, in your life and the lives of thousands and thousands of Black and Brown men who were incarcerated. And it was more than just, you know, hot women. It was, you absorbed the magazine from cover to cover. I'm pretty sure that you probably read every single word, even the advertisements.
Pretty much.
You know, so, I mean, I thought it was fascinating, you know, from the standpoint of how you looked at King Magazine, where it was a connection to the outside world, you know, and it was almost like a form of representation, because I feel like in jail in prison, you feel less than a human. And I feel like this magazine might have made you rediscover your sense of humanity. But only you can talk to that.
Yeah. I mean, like the magazine was really a portal into an evolving world within our culture. So like a lot of us went to prison when we were really young. So I went to prison, I was 19 years old. And so as the culture began to evolve, to have content that reflected the reality of what the world was going to look like and what it was starting to look like that was so invaluable. And then the other part of it was, in most of the prisons I was in, it was like really rural prisons, right? So you're not seeing, you know, Black people in positions of power or authority. And you're only seeing the brothers who are locked up, and that's it. That's the only Black representation. Like, they wouldn't allow us to get BET. You know, back then, it definitely wasn't no Black shows on really that represented our reality that we had access to. So the magazines was really like our portal into the world of what was happening. And what I loved about it is it was representing an empowerment, you know, the go get it, go make it happen. You know, take the street knowledge, flip that into legitimate enterprise. And I was like, damn, that's it right there. You know, like, that's speaking my language. I'm going to be just real with y'all while I got y'all here. I wanted to write for King so bad. So I got to write this magazine, right? Because when it came out, it was the time that I was just beginning to understand who I was as a writer. I had wrote little pieces for, like, college magazines and prison magazines, literally by default. But in 2001, I was at this point in my journey where I began to ask the tough questions about how I ended up in prison. And that's when I began writing. And as a writer, I'm like, I want to be able to share these jewels with the people. But because I was in solitary, I couldn't get the information out. And by the time I got out, they had started banning the magazine in prison. And so I would send letters, but I wouldn't even know if they had even received them, because we couldn't get the magazine no longer, except for when they were smuggled in.
Mm. Yo. Were you guys aware that the magazine had been banned in prisons?
Yeah, so it was crazy. I was gonna jump on that real quick. Yo, Shaka, thank you for those words, bro. It was wild. Like, you have a vision or an intention on, you know, hey, it's gonna be some hot women and dope cars and all this stuff. But then it was always like, all right, well, where's the substance that I can add to what we're already doing that we felt was substance anyway, by giving a platform to women and into the lifestyle? Where's the substance aspect? So we would talk about guys that would be coming home from prison and what they would do with their time, or the things that they, you know, they were like starting businesses and things of that nature. And, or if you're coming home, here are some programs for you to be involved in, and here's the setup. So then we started getting like letters from different county jails and stuff, like, oh, this is sent back You guys can't get in because of nudity. It was like, yo, there's no nudity in there. Mm-hmm. So they had varying levels of nudity. You wouldn't have done it if it was nudity in there.
No,
so,
no, you know what I'm saying? Know that. There's no way I could oppose if there was if it was nudity.
That's not happening.
And then, what's crazy about that though? Uh-huh. What's crazy about that is all the other magazines was getting in.
Yeah.
So all the white imprints were still getting in. Like we were able to get Playboy when we couldn't get King.
Which is crazy.
Right.
Wow. But Shaka, you know, I didn't mean to cut, but just real quick to speak on that real quick. The other part that they would also started adding was, oh, there are gang signs in there. It was gang signs. And now I'm like, what? I'm going through all the ads. I'm looking at everything. And it would be like, example.
Is this a gang sign?
It was this.
Really? Yeah.
So,
yep.
Like it would be like somebody would just be, I'm like, what gang sign?
Being black, basically.
And it was no gang signs. Just putting your fingers separated was enough.
You know what I mean? Ass hands in that mug, and they'd have been like,
and they're like, look
ass
at that.
Hands is too much as a black person.
Over 60. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Really? Like it made no sense. So once that started happening, like a couple of years into the mag, I started becoming conscious of the way things were being shot. Yep. I was starting to become conscious of some of the things that we would even label. And it was like this fine balance that no one knew on the outside of being culturally on point, being sarcastic, clever, informative, cool, all within a headline. You had to be like, okay, is this going to make it past the censors? Mm-hmm. So it was like this delicate dance of being able to put all this stuff in, especially being from the hip hop culture. You want to be cool, but there were certain things that you couldn't put in that you know would hit just so you can get it into the brothers that you know you would really like to enjoy it.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about the censorship of the magazine behind bars. I mean, there's no way that I possibly would know anything like that. But Shaka, I agree with you. I wanted to write for King Magazine too. I think I wrote for the blog like a couple of
times. I think so.
Yeah.
And
we got one of the covers here.
Oh wait! Oh my god. I want to go back talk about that.
Definitely remember that cover.
I brought out a couple of gems.
Yeah, that cover was that, like, just for everybody listening, when I did a magazine cover, I turned my cover shoots into a party. Didn't I bring a DJ with me?
Yes.
I brought the weed man. I brought a jeweler. I brought everybody with me.
It was my friends.
Oh my God, who showed up? Who showed up to my cover shoot? Rasheed.
I remember.
Rasheed Wallace showed up.
Wow. He showed up. And somebody else showed up.
Ebro showed up.
Yo, that was a dope one, man.
Big Tigger showed up. I used to, my photo shoots used to be the shit. It was like the place to be.
Oh. Ever since that one, me and Tigger, of course, was mad cool. Uh-huh. Edo as well was cool with him too. Tigger used to just like, you need to do such and such. I'm coming to this shoot. You gotta, here's such and such.
Yeah, he's always with the alley-oop. That was definitely Tig's foot in the door to show up to every single shoot. Another theme that I wanted to kind of cover today was like about representation and being seen. You know, so in doing, you know, my podcast, I'm Here for the Food, I've had a lot of guests on that haven't, you know, that might be considered members of fringe society or dismissed by society or whatever the case is, or just thought of in a very one-dimensional manner, and how important, you know, how appreciative people are when they feel seen. And when it comes to the magazine, King Magazine, I like to call the King Magazine reader, the average reader, a hood renaissance man, you know, a cultured ruffian, you know?
Yes, and, I'll take that.
Yeah, and Day, you told me a story about, you know, being on the train and coming face to face with a King Magazine reader who at first glance was very physically imposing and maybe looked a little intimidating, but your interaction with him just left you kind of speechless, and it's a memory that you still have.
All the time I think about it.
Yeah, you gotta tell the story, because I'm sure that Shaka hasn't heard it, and Adele, you might have heard it.
Nah, AA probably heard it. So a few years into the mag, I'm talking like we started in 2001. So this probably, I'm going to guesstimate and say like 2003 or 2004, and we're like on this hot streak. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're killing it. We're like at one point, percentage wise, not in sales, but in percentage wise, we're right under Oprah. It was crazy. Oprah's mag. We were on the blue, on the pink sheets, and all that. It was crazy times.
Wow.
So I would get recognized because now I'm on VH1. I'm doing Fabulous Life. I'm on BET hosting, like, you know, Freestyle Fridays and stuff like that. So a little bit more, you know, star power is coming up. And I'm a train dude. I'm a Brooklyn kid through and through. So I still ride the train, even though I would drive, I ride the train. I get on the train to go home, and this dude is on the doors, and he's just looking at me like, I'm just like, might know me, he might not, but he looked kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. Oh, we gonna be fighting between this pole or something? I don't know what's up. And I was like, yo, man, you good? What's up? Like, you know, in a good way. And he was like, yo, I was hoping you said something, man. You that dude from King? I was like, yeah. He was like, oh my God. Yo, I just came home. I'm a big fan. I wasn't sure if it was you, but I just want to say, man. And he just starts crying. And he starts talking about how my editorial letter in the front of the mag, he had it up in his cell, you know, with all the girls and everything. And he said that it was so inspiring because I was always talking about, you know, elevating yourself within your confined areas. And I wasn't meaning it only for someone that was in prison. I was meaning it for your mental. Mm-hmm. You could be in the confines of yourself and just, you gotta elevate and just like kind of jump out of that box that you're even putting your own self in. And that's what I wanted to do with what we were trying to present within the King brand. And this dude just started crying and stuff, and I just gave him a pound and a hug, and I was like, yo, bro, this is the most, you put energy out and you see what kind of energy comes back. Yeah. And he said that, you know, every once in a while he would go to it, and when he would get the mags and stuff, he would go to that first.
Yeah.
And it used to bug me out because I used to stress so hard over those edit letters, just to put them in the right place and get the right energy. I play the right kind of music, have the right people around. I would call Jermaine Hall, who's another pillar within the organization for just making it right.
Mm-hmm.
He was another person I bounced stuff off. Sean Malcolm,
mm-hmm.
Ben Osborne, you know, Rochelle, State. It's so many people, man. It was just like, you put all of that into good energy,
mm-hmm.
and you hope that people receive it well. And that was like one of the prime ones. I had a billion like interactions like that, but that one right there was one that always sticks with me.
Hey foodies, so I've got a new favorite thing and a deal for you guys again. I don't know about you guys, but I'm spending a lot of time at home. And I'm spending a lot of time with my thoughts these days. And you know what I think to myself is that adulting is very, very hard, okay? And what is usually encompassed within adulting? Thinking about insurance. Auto insurance, life insurance, home insurance. But guess what? Policy Genius has you covered, okay? So what you're gonna do is you're gonna log onto policygenius.com and you're going to fill out a questionnaire. Then what's going to happen is you're gonna enter into policygenius.com your current rates of insurance. That's home, that's auto, that's life. And they're gonna do a bunch of comparisons with other rates. And they're gonna find you the best one for you. On average, Policy Genius customers save upwards of $690 per year on their insurance needs. So, like I said, I want you guys to head over to policygenius.com. They will compare your current rates, and if they find something better for you, then they're going to do all the work to switch you over to the new insurance companies. So, again, that is policygenius.com for all of your insurance needs. Auto, life, and especially home, they've got you covered. Check them out right now. policygenius.com.
Shaka, does that speak to you, the editor's letter? I mean, it's the first thing pretty much after a couple of advertisements that you see in the magazine. And, you know, Day, I've known you for over 15 years, and I know just how much of a genuine, compassionate, you know, considerate soul you are. So I know the effort that you would put into your writing. You would be extremely like, what's the theme?
What do I
tell people? You know, how am I going to uplift my fellow brethren? And, you know, like, and so I just wonder, Shaka, like, how the editor's note spoke to you. And if this was conversation, once you got out of solitary, if this was conversation that you and fellow inmates would have amongst each other, besides just the girls, you know, the actual editorial pieces and the writing.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, I'm so happy you shared that story, and like that really, I understand the brother. You know, and I understand the tears and why those tears were so cathartic for him in that moment, because when you're in an environment where you're growing up in this environment and it doesn't look like the world you come from, and then you're able to see the evolution of what it means to be a young Black man in American society through the dope editorials that our brothers was dropping. And so for us, it was like, yo, all the things we're imagining, because everything for us was imagination, right? Like Malcolm gave us the imagination to dream that we can get out of here and we can do something to our lives. But it was all theory. It was all hypothetical, right? And it's like reading this magazine where you're actually seeing, you know, the hip hop artists that came from the street, and you're seeing the urban writers that's writing these books, and you're seeing these beautiful sisters who America is telling that they're not beautiful, but we know they're dope as hell. And we're like, this is all of the things, right? But the thing that was really dope was the sophistication and the intentional right. behind, like, you can be a intelligent and who comes out of difficult circumstances, but you evolve. And so those letters was like, me and my bros, we'd be sitting there like, yo, when I get out, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And it's one of the things where you have to, as much as I was trying to convince them, it was also us, the self-talk, right? It's like, yo, here is proof. This is proof of concept now. We got people that's actually doing it, and I stuck to it. You know, like everything that I've done to this moment in my life is rooted in all the dope shit that I read while I was in prison that told me that I could. And that's what King represented. It was like, it told me that I could. It told me that, hey, there's beautiful, dope sisters out here who love dope brothers, and that's attainable when you get out. You know what I mean? There's entrepreneurship that's attainable when you get out. You know, there's all these incredible things that we were dreaming about with no ability to see them until they were put in that form. And so, you know, I got emotional listening to you tell that story, because I know
what
it was like to be affirmed, bro. And it was affirming for us, and it was telling us that we can absolutely make it happen. And so to come full circle, you know, when you and I first met, you know, and I was able to say, hey, bro, here's what that meant to me. Like, I believe in giving people flowers while they're here. And you know, hip hop community culture, like, that inspired me in such a way, man. So I'm where I'm at today, and I still operate out of that energy, and that's why we're always vibing.
All the time.
So listen, I wanted to switch gears, because Shaka and I were talking about something earlier, and I was thinking to myself, like, ooh, I wonder what King Magazine would be like today. But I want to start with you, Adele. You once described the presentation of women in the magazine as more of a love letter to them rather than exploitative and, you know, fetishization. How do you think that the magazine would fare during the era of Me Too?
Oh, we'd be good. Right, we'd be good. Here's the thing. You know, if we wasn't good, y'all would know right now, because we're in the heart of Me Too.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing about, you know, like us, I mean, we're still here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people who were, you know, operating in the same space at that time, we really don't, you know where they're at. You know, they're not really, you know, active. But that was one of the things that, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, you and I, you know, became really close. You know, just the same way with a lot of the other girls that were, you know, in the magazine. If, you know, just you talking about just, you know, fun facts. I mean, you hear things about, you know, the relationships and the, you know, how much we respected and, you know, was really, you know, dependent on, you know, the brothers and
sisters
who are, but not only that, but the brothers and sisters who were incarcerated to keep us grounded. Like, that was a really big deal to us.
Mm-hmm.
But another one of the things that people would never know just by reading the magazine or by just seeing us around is, man, we had amazing conversations and relationships with a lot of these girls' mothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because it was a lot of, girls that were transitioning from child star who wanted to, you know, hey, I want to give a sexy look. I'm all grown up now. Nobody's really taking me seriously. Casting directors are not even looking at me. When I tell you, you know, Christina Milian, you know, and her moms, you know, Megan Good and her moms, you know, Tatiana Ali and her moms, even Tyra and her mom.
Tyra and her moms.
Right? I mean, I'm talking about, just imagine, you know, as young, you know, editors, consistently having these conversations, not only with these beautiful young women, but also with their mothers and saying like, you know what, we got her. Mm-hmm. Trust her.
Yep. Yeah. You know, don't worry about it. We good. Us.
You know, and to be able to continue those relationships over the years. So it's not like, oh, you know what I'm saying? We got you, deal. We want to do. We out of here, sucker. Like,
yeah, no. It definitely
maintained great relationships with the girls and their moms.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't an accident. And, you know, one thing that I had another light bulb moment not too long ago where I was speaking at Dillard University in New Orleans. And one of the girls asked me about, you know, Melissa, how did you deal with, you know, the attempts of, you know, sexual assault or sexual harassment, you know, during, you know, doing magazine covers and music videos. And I looked at her like blink, blank, blank fucking stare. Like, I said, it's just dawning on me right now that those weren't even concepts back then. That wasn't even a discussion. We didn't even have the vocabulary to even think or speak like that. I said, you all, it's a very different world for you right now, especially hashtag Me Too, Time's Up. It's a completely different conversation where we acknowledge, you know, different forms of abuse and trauma that we have happened to us. But back then, not only was it an unheard of concept, it was almost expected that you were going, as a woman, that you were going to encounter that. And so when I ended up doing a King magazine cover, I was literally shocked by the level of decency that you guys had as men. Because you could have totally exploited your position. You could have taken full advantage of, you know, what you were doing, being the editors of a magazine that everybody, from the girl around the way to top celebrity actresses and models, everyone wanted to be on the cover, and you guys could have totally taken advantage of that. But you all were just so complete, like just incredibly decent. And with, you know, with Day, you were married at the time, correct?
Still married.
You know, still. You know, you have beautiful daughters, but you were a young married man at the time. I mean, has, you know, being the EIC of King, did that ever, you know, create friction in your relationship with your wife? Like, how did you manage that? Because not a lot of men would have been able to manage that.
What's the secret, bro? What's the secret?
Shaka was jumping in. I was like, yo, now that one you're going to have to explain, bro. Yeah. I would have to say my wife, like, she's just been the best ever, you know what I mean? Like, you just got to think about, like, the pressure that's on her to be able to walk within that and say, like, oh, yeah, my husband does this. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's crazy. But when you think about all the people that we had around us, like, you know, like Shanita Palmer, who was our creative director slash, you know, fashion director on that level, I'm having, like, young women on staff with us, they have to be able to say, like, oh, you know, our CEO or our editor-in-chief, he's a good guy. This is somebody that I can go to if I have an issue. Mm-hmm. And I've always run any of my staffs like that. Like, yo, and you got to be able to show that. You got to be able to, you know, to walk within that. And, you know, just being young and thinking like, hey, I don't want to mess this up for anybody that may want to follow behind. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to, you know, have like bad habits that will create somebody to, you know, mess up on their path as well. I have some really good mentors as well. Selwyn, Seifu Hines, Reginald Dennis. These are guys that were like super laser focused in the visions that they have for like The Source and for XXL. So for me to kind of like pick from them, like, all right, cool, this is how they did it. I'm going to go that route because I see the success factor. And I also felt like word gets out if you do some craziness. Like, we used to hear all the craziness from the other spots.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And women, everyone would talk. So they would come back to us and be like, yeah, because da-da-da-da. And yeah. I would hold it. I wouldn't go spread it, but I would hold it and understand, like, all right, cool. I know what we can't do, and I know what everyone that's down with us can't do as well.
Yeah.
You know, just being able to spread that. And our team, if you talk to anybody on our team, from Jermaine to Bonsu to Keith Murphy to Sean Malcolm, who else? Hey, like, everybody that was on squad on squad.
I had to ask Adele. I was like, was this a mandate that was sent out, you know, from the top down that instructed everybody to, you know, represent the magazine well and to operate with a level of self-control? Or was this just, you know, kind of like hive mind, you know, like-mindedness to where, because I, you just named a bunch of names and they were all decent brothers. Every one of them, you know, King was like, it was so PG-13 on set.
once you got behind the cover, you was like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was that tip drill video I came to Atlanta for. That was a little.
Come on, man. That's tip drill, though.
No. That's
we are talking about the themes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that was no, but yeah. I will, going back to what you said, though, I mean, it, you know, like I said, it does come, a lot of that comes from Daytuan really setting the tone. Mm-hmm. And it was a true reflection of who he was. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, you know, me and, let me see, King started 2001. Me and Day met August of 98.
Mm-hmm.
August 98, you know, so
it's crazy.
The thing is, we immediately clicked. You know, it was just something, you know, that, you know, one of those just game recognized game type of things. And you got to think, yo, I'm from Flint, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Born and raised, you know, Daytoine, you know, Brooklyn, but he also, you know, traveled the world. When I tell you, like, we wanted, you know, this so bad. You know, it's not even to the point to where we wanted it so bad. And it's just like, oh man, we were surprised that it happened. Like, no, we were destined to be in this space and we were destined to stay in this space. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a whole other part of it too. It wasn't like, oh man, I'm so here. I'm so excited to be in a room and so excited to see somebody. Let me go before, you know, the clock strikes 12 and, you know, the ride turns back into a pumpkin. Let me get all I could get. Like, no, we knew we were destined to be here. We're supposed to be here.
Yeah.
And that's the way that we operated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it didn't matter. You know, you got to imagine. I mean, in terms of like the biggest looks, we had Tyra Banks. You talking about biggest model in on the planet, Janet Jackson.
Other magazines, other magazines thought that they were in competition with you, but you guys were in like a lane, you know, a league of your own. I'm reading some of the comments. Somebody said it really shouldn't be hard to act right in a place of business. King folks seem to have integrity. That is very true. But on the flip side, you know, abundance reveals character, you know, money, you know, access to things just reveals who you are. So if you're a fucking douchebag with, you know, without money, you're going to be a bigger douchebag with a lot of money. And so if you have access to a bunch of these women, and these are women who are literally like, I will do anything to be on the cover of King. Yeah. There's some guys that will be like, oh, I know exactly what you could do to be on the cover of King. And these were not the guys. So I just kind of wanted to make that, you know, that distinction that they should be, you know, championed for the fact that they exercised restraint. You know, because trust me, I was there. A lot of men did not exercise any form of restraint, but I wish they would try me, because you all know that.
Let me also speak to that. I mean, you mentioned that, you know, at the time we started King, Day was married. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very single.
Yes, you were.
I was very single, West Coast editor, you know, out in Cali. Like the office itself was based in New York. So I was literally out on the West Coast by myself doing me, taking meetings, you know, doing everything that was necessary to move the brand forward. But for me, on the flip side, the girls who came with that, I'll do anything industry, that type of energy, it's like, you're not right for us. You know, it's like
there's a lot of turn downs.
That's the type of energy that won't get you in.
Right. It was a lot of turned down because of that.
Yeah. I'm like, if I'm seeing that that's your MO and it's like you want it that bad that you're willing to do all it, like, nah, that's not the type of energy, you know, that we're interested in. So, you know, there were other outlets where, okay, cool, that's something that's, you know, may strike an interest over there, but it's like, nah, we want it like, man, we was going
for it up here.
Halle, we going for Beyonce, you know, we want the girls, even the younger, you know, girls that were from around the way that was coming in, we wanted them to have a certain level of integrity and you know, it's like all of that, you know, so now that's not the type of energy we was really trying to attract.
What's up, foodies? We've got a new deal and another favorite thing for you. Now, what happens if you need to go to the post office? Right now, probably not the best idea. So if you have to mail out products, if you have to, because you've started a new online business, if you have to mail a letter to mom, whatever your postage needs are, guess who's got you covered? Stamps.com. That is the best place to get all of your postal business done without actually having to leave your house. Stamps.com brings all of the services from the United States Postal Service right into your living room, which is extremely convenient for most of us right now because I don't think anybody's going anywhere. So if you have gotten motivated and you started that online business, guess who's got you covered? Stamps.com. If you need to mail out a bunch of product, Stamps.com has you covered. If you need to send invoices to anybody, Stamps.com has you covered. Simply use your computer to print off official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. And once your mail is ready, you just leave it for your mail carrier or schedule a free package pickup or drop it in a mailbox. No human contact required, people, and that is a bonus these days. And like I said, with Stamps.com, you get great discounts too, like 5 cents off of every first-class stamp and up to 40% off of USPS shipping rates. And now, in addition to offering discounted U.S. Postal Service rates, Stamps.com also offers UPS services with discount rates up to 62%. Plus, with Stamps.com, you won't even have to pay UPS residential surcharges, and that is amazing. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, so I'm going to let you guys know exactly how to save. So right now, this is what I want you guys to do. As our listeners, you're going to get a 4-week free trial, you're going to get a digital scale, and you're going to get free postage. All you got to do is go to Stamps.com, and you're going to click the microphone on the top right-hand corner of the page, and you're going to enter our code, and that is FOOD, F-O-O-D, FOOD. Log on to Stamps.com, and the discount code is FOOD for your 4-week free trial, for your digital scale, and for your free postage, Stamps.com. Don't say we didn't do anything for you.
So there's a question that I want to ask. This is from somebody on YouTube, Nikki Henderson. She says, do you think that King Magazine gets the credit it deserves within the Black community, and more specifically, Black publications? They're often looked down upon, while predominantly white publications are seen in a different light. I think we kind of covered that, but you know, soundbite answer to that. Do you guys think that you received the credit that you deserved?
I'm not sure. I think we got it from the people that we wanted to get it from. And then from the ones that we wanted to impress, there were times where I would get a note from some editors over at GQ, like, wow, this issue is amazing, or it rocks, or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, this is crazy. So, you know, like certain kind of, I guess like adulation and all that, it did make a difference. It made you know, like, oh, okay, they watch you. But I wasn't like as worried about it as I thought I would be once we started doing the work. Cause right. then I was like, yo, we dope. Right. So like, if you don't rock with us, then that's your fault.
Right. Shaka, there's a question here by Teresa Warren. How difficult was it for you to keep a positive attitude being secluded from the world at such a young age?
I mean, early on, it was extremely difficult. You know, the reality was when I got sentenced, I was 19 years old, and I was looking at a 17 to 40-year prison sentence. So I just thought life was over, you know, and I was really fortunate to meet some incredible mentors who basically gave me books, you know, and books and Nelson Mandela and all these books and Donald Goins and Iceberg Slim. It gave me just a glimmer of hope. And if a person can hang on to hope you can get to the other side of any type of painful experience. And so for me, you know, I went through those moments. I had my dark periods, you know, some really dark periods when I was in there, and I just didn't know if I was ever going to get out. And basically what I did is what I'm telling people who are going through this quarantine right now, you know, sometimes you have to turn within. And, you know, journaling was really helpful for me, writing, reading. But, you know, the magazines contributed so much to just that hope, you know, because what I love, and I'm probably reinforced this multiple times, is when you're trying to get somebody to turn their life around who come from, like, the real streets, right? Like, we get a lot of rappers to be like, oh, I did a bid. I'm like, no, bro, you went to camp. Like, get the fuck out of here. We talking about real street cats, right? Like, really gritty. I done did all the street shit, right? Shit that I can't, like, sometimes I can't even imagine that person, you know, at this point, except for in these conversations. So it's extremely hard to turn that mentality around. Mm-hmm. And the reason that it was so hard, because we didn't see any models. So, like, even when I was reading Malcolm, I went to prison in 91, you know what I mean? Malcolm's era was the 60s, right? Mm-hmm. So as much as I knew that there was some power in the intelligence, whatever, there still wasn't a model that was relatable. And then I started, you know, seeing the magazines, and then we started getting the books like The Street Lit, you know, you're getting Terry Woods and Sister Soldier. Then you're getting, you know, Cody Monster Scott writing these books about, you know, getting out of prison and Chef Jeff and all these things. So now I was like, oh, mm-hmm. these guys was on the block like I was on the block. Mm-hmm. They took their skills from the streets and applied them to something legit, but they're also feeding themselves intellectually, you know? And so being able to see that model just gave me so much hope that there can be another way, you know? And I literally took that model and ran with it. You know, I would talk to my guys every day. We would walk the yard. I'm like, bro, this is what I'm going out here to do. And it was, you know, I always get some detractors, right? Like, you know, as soon as you get out there, you're going to get that bag. Like, you know, you're the guy. Like, these guys love you in the streets. So, you know, when you come home, they're going to bless you. You know, you ain't going to be able to turn all that down. I was like, bro, I'm going to get out and I'm going to sell these books. And that's what I did. I literally got out first day. First thing I did, sold a book out to Trump. I've been selling books for 10 years straight. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And wow. My guys, they used to pull up in the Benzes and the Ranges and, come on, baby, come on, get this bag, these little $15 books. Yeah. I'm like, look, bro, I'm going to hop in this little Honda Civic. You know what I mean? Then I graduated to my little Beater, my little 96 Caprice Classic, and I would hustle them books. You know what I mean? But I never wavered, because I knew from reading those magazines that if you stuck to it, it'll flip over, you know? Yeah. And I don't know where none of them cats at, but I live out here in L.A. now with a, you know, a little some toys out here, you know what I mean?
All right.
what's crazy, you know, Day and Adele, I just, you know, after talking to Shaka earlier this afternoon, his book is censored in prison, just like King Magazine was censored. I mean, it's almost like they're afraid you got the blueprint of how to get the fuck out in the book.
You're afraid that you're going to start tuning yourself to a higher frequency and you start looking at things and you start, you know, galvanizing people to feel the same way. Mm-hmm. And once that happens, everyone is lifted and then they don't have anything to do. Mm-hmm. They can't keep you. You know what I mean? So just to be able to talk to Shaka, like after he got out and he expressed like the love and all that, I was just like, wow, man, like you got to think of that times however many other people that were affected by that. And I'm not just saying because of King or anything. I'm just saying because hip hop culture, you know, urban culture or whatever they want to call it, it's one of the most empowering business level liftoffs. Because if you look at other genres of music or whatever, there aren't as many entrepreneurs across the board that come into the game like, hey, I have a talent. This is what I'm going to do to get here. And then I'm going to explode and do all these other things. That's what we're able to do if we keep our minds on it. And we keep trucking, because most of us that are doing this now, especially like even editors and stuff, everyone is doing something else. You always elevate into something and you turn into a bigger version of yourself that you have never even thought about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's another theme that I've been thinking constantly about because of, you know, where we are today. I've been thinking, you know, what kind of world are we about to wake up to? You know what I'm saying? Man. Like, a lot of us are going to have to pivot. Some people are already doing it and figuring out like what the next wave is going to be and how they'll be able to, you know, create revenue and income to feed themselves, survive, feed their families and that sort of thing. But this question's directed towards Shaka, because I want to have a general understanding and give the audience this. You know, what are the mental and physical ramifications of staying inside in a constant state of stress based on like this 24-hour news cycle about COVID-19, death toll updates? Like, what is this doing to us from the standpoint of somebody who actually lived this?
Yeah, I think the biggest struggle that people are having right now is the uncertainty, like not knowing. And I remember when I was in solitary, the one thing when I was going through that dark time is because they wouldn't tell me when I was getting out. So they wasn't like, hey, you got 5 years to do, you got 3 years, whatever. And it was just like, we're not going to tell you. And so it kept me so off balance that emotionally it was really challenging because I didn't feel like I was grounded in anything. And what I learned to do was recognize, like, I can only focus on the things that I'm in control of. And so what I say to people in these moments is we have to think about our reality, right? We've been, you know, it's bad. You know, the conditions are bad. The hardest thing is that people are dying because people aren't being careful, whatever the case may be, right? But if you really step back, zoom out of, like, the emotion of the moment and recognize the abundance of blessings we have, we're able to do this. You know, brothers and sisters on lockdown, they can't do that. Like, there was an article, a thing that came out, Ellen. Yeah, because she like, yo, I feel like I'm in prison because I've been wearing the same clothes for 10 days and everybody's gay. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know, I'm like, I'm not even hypersensitive about a lot of things. But in this situation where people inside are currently dying and they're literally confined in an environment where they can't social distance, they can't get away. And then to basically launch this attack in a sense of humor that, you know, stereotypes people's sexuality, is inconsiderate of their real reality. I just thought that was really a sad thing to do, but it's also a teachable moment. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm always thinking about. Okay, like, it's okay, you have this platform and you want to say these jokes, but here, let's really talk about the real thing that's beneath these jokes, because you can't keep monetizing our pain and not be held accountable for it.
You know, I'm glad that you said that, because, you know, Angela Yee, you know, brought that up in Rumor Report, the fact that that Ellen had made those comments that, you know, quarantine is she likened it to being in jail because she's wearing the same clothes every day and everybody's gay. And Charlamagne gave her Donkey of the Day. So then Van Jones, you know, backed your point, because you wrote you were compassionate in your response to Ellen and what she said, but you also let her know there was nothing okay with what you said. And it is a teachable moment. Then I went into the comments, you know, and it's like fucking purgatory in there. And everybody was like, it's just a joke. Why are we taking it so seriously? And that sort of thing. But I mean, what's your thoughts on the fact that people thought that it was being taken too seriously, and we understand what, you know, the joke she was making?
I mean, it's the reality of why we need publications like King, because when we don't control our own stories, then people can tell us how to feel about things that impact us, right? And basically, I was going back and forth with some people for a minute, and then I found myself getting a little too heated. What privilege is, because you know that word is used so often, right?
Yes, that word is. That is definitely a trigger word these days, privilege.
And the reality is, what privilege is it allows you the emotional distance to be tone deaf without any accountability, without having to actually even consider anybody else's point of view outside of your own. And that's the world we live in, because our media and our content and our stories are often owned by other people who don't have to live in proximity to the realities of the things that they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so now that, you know, there are platforms, and like, I understand like what my voice is in this space, and I will fight to the death to, you know, humanize the men and women who are in prison, because these are my real friends. Like, just how people go off and go to school and go to college and they meet people and they're lifelong friends. These are my friends.
Right.
These are my friends who some made poor decisions. Some are actually innocent. My best friend, his name is Calvin Evans. He's been free now for about 6 or 7 years. He did 24 years for a crime that he did not commit, never was exonerated. And he is one of the dopest stand-up people with the most dope spirit, because he didn't allow bitters to set. I think I was more mad about the injustice than he was. But these are real friends. These are people who I know in a real way. So I'm always going to defend them, you know, and I think it's important that if we're going to house this many people, we should be having honest conversations. And I mean, like, to label everybody in prison as gay, right? First of all, prison is hyper homophobic. Mm-hmm. I mean, deadly homophobic to the extreme of the masculinity is so extreme in that environment that if you say you're like a prison yard leader, and then you decide that you want to live an alternative sexual lifestyle, that can get you killed in prison. Like, that costs you, like, it's a real consequence to that. So in her saying that in such a casual way, I just felt it was unfair to those of us who that wasn't our lifestyle choice or weren't born that way, right? Because I think there's a duality in that part. Mm-hmm, and the flip side is people walking out of prison, like, I can tell you, like, as a dating single man, there's conversations where I've seen the tension when a woman like, oh, so you're in 19 years? And I know that those wheels are spinning. And I'm like, I'm just a real dude. Like, look, you can ask me anything. Like, let's talk about it because it's important to talk about. It's important to talk about it in a healthy way. That's not about attacking somebody's sexuality. It's about saying, hey, you can be straight and it's okay to talk about being straight and that you love who you are as a hetero male or hetero woman without it being an affront to somebody else who isn't. But at the same time, like, don't label all of us just because that, you know, you thought that was cute. And so it just wasn't cool. And I thought it was important to speak to that.
Yeah, somebody's asked the question, is Shaka concerned that folks won't be able to take lessons from being quarantined like this? It seems folks are either freaking out in denial or partying like idiots, LOL, which is true. I'm sure we know all three. But I mean, what are you hoping that everybody, you know, this is a collective question. Like, what are you guys hoping, you know, everybody kind of gets out of this, you know, this time that we're being forced to stay at home and live with ourselves, you know, me being a single mm-hmm. person at home. Well, shit, I've been, this is no real change in my real life. I kind of do this, but for like the average person, it seems like they're having some extreme difficulty with spending this time alone with themselves. Like, what are you guys mm-hmm. hoping society comes away with in terms of learning lessons from this, you know, episode in our lives?
Well, I think one of the things that I've been seeing a lot on social media is like, if you come out of this without a business or something like that, then you wasted your time or whatever. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. You can have plans and visions of what you want to do, but I think this time right now, on a holistic base level, is to get yourself right. Is to start talking to yourself. We all move so much that we don't get a chance for self. Regardless of who you have to live with and deal with their, you know, insecurities or deal with their fears or anything like that, they have to get themselves right. You have to get yourself right. And I think, like, this is that time to be like, okay, what is it that I want to research? What is it that I want to do for that business? And those type of things. Not like, oh, you didn't make money during this whole thing. It's like, yeah, you got to make money. You have to come out of this and know, like, okay, I'm going to go in this direction. I think that's the thing, though. You have to be able to settle within yourself and become the better version of you that you've always wanted to do. And this time is important for that.
Yeah. Adele.
Well, I know for me, the one of the reasons why, you know, me and Day get along so well, you know, Shaq and I, you know, just immediately click. You know, Melissa, you know, my homeboy, you know, I can't even, you know, really go too much long without talking about my brother Kirk Mays, who made the connection between me and Shaka, you know, and it's like
he's been in the comments.
That's my brother. That's my brother. That's my other day, Twan.
Hey, Kirk.
Gotten Harvest, you know, out there, another amazing community leader out in Detroit. Ultimately, what it comes down to is when you take a couple steps back and you know, just look outside of what our real reality is in terms of the pandemic. I mean, right now we're just in a situation. I mean, the formula of success that all of us here, you know, have been using forever is what we're executing right now. Control what you can control. Don't worry about what you don't have, worry about what you have. Because we all come from, you know, backgrounds, in environments to where it's a lot of people taking, you know, losses. It's like we're doing extraordinary things based on where we come from. But the thing is, we're not necessarily, it's not like we're superheroes. You know, it's like we just put in the work. We concentrated on, okay, what can I do? You know, what not, I'm not tripping on what I can't do. What can I actually do today? And then tomorrow, what can I do today? And it's like, if you have that type of mindset every day, in a week, you're going to have a productive week. If you look up, you know, in a month, you'll have a productive month. It's like, it literally is one of those, you know, one day at a time, you know, type of philosophies, focusing on what can you actually do? Because all it's here, it's mental. Like at the end of the day, it's all mental. Mm-hmm. And once you start focusing on the things that you could actually get done, that's what's going to help take you to the next space. But if it's a thing where it's like, ah, man, I'm just going to take another nap. I'm going to just go to sleep again. Mm. I'm about to smoke.
Yeah.
I'm about to drink. And this, and if that's how you're using your days, at the end of that week, you're going to see how non-productive that you were. You know, it's like that. I'm telling you, that's the formula. You know, it took, unfortunately, it took, you know, Shaka to get into a situation to where he ultimately came on the outside and he started putting that formula in place. But truth be told, Shaka is Daytuan and I. You know, Daytuan and I, you know, we inner city guys.
Just one different decision away.
Listen, decision that's not even always our decision. It could just be
that's real too.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, and one of the things that, you know, we didn't get a chance to get into, like Shaka was like the smart kid growing up.
Yeah, no, I mean, I encourage everybody who's on the channel right now to go and watch the episode of I'm Here for the Food where I interviewed Shaka, because like one of my first questions to Shaka was, how does an honor roll student in a middle class home with two parents in the household go from that to being convicted of second degree murder? Like, and he fills in the blanks, you know, and also I encourage you all to read his story, because you learn how an honor roll student, you know, goes to being, you know, incarcerated for, you know, 17 to 40 years. You see the path, and he's very descriptive as to, you know, the, like, each step that led him closer to, you know, that destiny.
The reoccurring theme is, regardless to what circumstance that you get yourself into, as long as you're here above ground, you know, you have opportunities to breathe and get out, like, you can make a difference, regardless, because there's a lot of people that find themselves, dang, man, I was doing really well, I screwed up, now my life is over, and it's like, mentally, their life is over.
Yeah.
But, you know, for Shaka, it was like, man, I'm about to get it.
Yeah. Trisha Smith says, this platform is opening up the subject to so many people that haven't had the interest or comprehension of the Black male prisoner. And, you know, I mean, one thing that I've learned by doing my podcast and just being in the industry for the last 20 years is realizing just how much more similar we are than different, and how connected we all are by, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 degrees of separation. And how often we are walking, you know, our life is traveling in a parallel direction to somebody that we've yet to meet. And also how we serve as a form of inspiration to people that we may never, ever meet, but they carry us with them, you know? And I think that that's, like, really, really, really important. And that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to have, you know, this conversation with you guys. So, like, one thing that's been scaring the shit out of me before we leave is, like, what legislation is passing under our nose while we're constantly hearing about this apocalyptic news all day long? Like, what's really happening? Like, is the post office being defunded? Like, what's really going on? You know, have you guys, you know, anything?
I'm paying a lot of attention by you know, working on some of these issues. And I think it's really important for people not to get sidetracked. I do want to offer some thoughts based on the other question, though, because it's really important. So, you know, to Daytuan's point of everybody's like, oh, you got to do this, you got to do that. You know, I'm a parent, right? And I have an 8-year-old son. He's an incredible, super dope kid. And a lot of parents are really stressed out because they feel like they have to replicate some type of school-like structure and maintain some order. One of the greatest gifts we can give ourselves during these times of uncertainty is kindness and grace. And yep. there has to be a balance, right? Yes, you can go get it, you can make it happen, you can get up and hit all the things. But if you don't feel like getting up and you feel like, you know what, today is a little bit too heavy and I don't feel like stressing my life out, I don't feel like cooking a 4-course meal for my kids, they're going to eat these peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, I'm going to rock these ramens. Like, give yourself the grace for that.
That's been some real life, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. Because what it does is, for one, it helps your immune system to not be stressed and agitated and feel this pressure, right?
Man.
You know, so many people online, it's like, yeah, look at me. I'm about to come out and be Entrepreneur of the Year. Well, if you weren't doing that before this, don't fake the funk, right? Those of us who've been getting it, yeah, we're gonna sharpen those skill sets up. And yes, if it's something you've always been ambitious about, yeah, take this time and do that. But grace and kindness are two things that are the gifts that continue to give. What I really hope people come out on the other side of this with is a sense of what it actually means to be human. So much of our life is consumed by work, hustle. And what we're realizing right now in these moments, that about 80% of the things that we pursue aren't necessary for us to actually thrive as human beings. Mm-hmm. So they feed our ego. Like, I mean, most of us got cars in our driveway, right? I drove one time in the last week, right? Car looks amazing sitting out there, but it's sitting out there. It's not fulfilling anything in my life now other than sitting in my driveway, right? And it's not to say that when I'm done, I'm gonna, you know, get rid of my car and no things like that, but it's just saying perspective. Perspective is everything. You know, the perspective that we have in this moment can really allow us to evolve into the amazing human beings we're all capable of. And like, just don't stress out. You know, find some grace, some kindness, and, you know, enjoy them days that you can relax, because once this is over, ain't going to be no days off. It's going to be back to it, the hustle and bustle, and you'll regret that you didn't sleep in. You'll regret that you didn't take that time off to just be, that you didn't just play with your kids instead of forcing them to learn something that they may or may not use in the future. Like, so just be present in what that feels like. If we can get that, and we can carry that energy to the other side, them old 80-hour work weeks won't be necessary, because you'll realize you can get half of that shit done in 30 hours, and then you can actually enjoy living a little bit, which is
the gift,
you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Passing thoughts. Go ahead, Adele.
You said what thoughts?
I said just like a thought to leave everybody with. Like, what are you thinking just in terms
of... Like I said, man, you know, one of my... You know, big brothers, and I'm, you know, another Detroit cat, E.T. the hip hop preacher, you know, Eric Thomas, you know, one of the, man, control what you can control. You know, at the end of the day, control what you can control. And if you just have that mindset, because going back to what Shaka said, you know, when you like stress, like you can get sick. like being stressed out, being in find yourself in a mental space to where you're just constantly stressing, high blood pressure, you get nervous, you're making erratic decisions. I mean, that can internally make you sick. And that's one thing we're trying to avoid doing, you know, keep our immune system up, you know, take the vitamins, you know, move around. And, you know, if there's certain things you can't do, you can't stress that. What can you actually get done in a day? You know, what can you get done to make today the most productive day possible? And repeat that tomorrow, and repeat that the next day, you know. And it's like, you can't punish your kids, you know, for, you know, just being in the circumstance. And it's frustrating, you know. It's like, I got a little one too, 9-year-old. And so, I mean, there's some times where she, you know, we want to dive on me, but yeah. I mean, I have to go ahead and remind myself. And that's another thing that, you know, Shaka's podcast episode, you know, definitely go back and look at that. It was really helpful, Shaka, just to listen to, you know, you just talking about how, you know, one of the common denominators of, you know, brothers that you served time with was like, man, just coming from abusive households.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of you all just sort of reacted, you know, based on that seed being planted. And so we have to be conscious of that with our children. You know, even though, oh, I was raised like this, it's like, that don't mean it was the right way.
Right.
Yeah,
so control what you can control. That's something that, you know, I'm just you know, huge on, and making the most out of every single day.
Yeah, we have Mike Casey said, I'm thankful for this downtime. It's allowed me and my relatives a chance to get closer spiritually to the Creator. You know, we're also being inundated with a lot of stories right now about, you know, the spike in domestic violence and, you know, possible child neglect and abuse during this time. So, you know, you're not really hearing a lot of stories about how this time together is bringing families and people closer together. You're only hearing about the ones that are being ripped apart. So, you know, I appreciate hearing, little notes like that from people who are saying that they're actually faring quite well, if right. not better. So Mike, Casey, thank you so much for that. Day, what are your thoughts? You know, you've been spending a lot of time with your, you know, your big family, your wife and your yep. beautiful daughters and stuff like that. Thank so
you. My God, baby.
Yes, yes. A is godfather to Tamia. She's the youngest out the crew. She thinks she runs the house too, though.
Dave's godfather to my Mia. So it's like,
yes, yeah. indeed. That's my little heart right there. I will say, like, what this time has done is kept me planted, because, like, by now, since we've been on lockdown, I probably would have traveled at least once or twice since. I averaged out last year, and I was like, Dad, what was the longest amount of time I stayed home? And it was, like, literally, like, 4 weeks, and then, like, straight. And then it was, like, a week, 2 weeks, for a whole year. And to be able to, you know, see my girls the way that I'm learning, like, new things about them, too, the way that they interact with each other. I'm learning new things about my wife. I didn't know that she was like that on her job calls. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't know. And then I was like, oh, dude, wow, okay, that's what that is. And just what I wanted to add was, like, I think people should enjoy the time. Try to find a way to enjoy it when they get stressed and when they get angry and they hear bad news about people, you know, passing and things of that nature. Take it easy on themselves. You know, be kind to yourself, like Shaka said, but as well as others. One of the highlights of this whole time has been D-Nice DJing for me and my family. You know what I mean? Like, we feel like he's doing it just for us. Yeah. You know, it's like, what time D-Nice on tonight? Everybody's trying to find out what time he's on. And then just seeing people galvanize and encourage one another. I actually did some Bob the Builder stuff this weekend. I sanded a big baker's rack and then tinted it. And I did not want to do it. My wife made me do it. And I was like, yo, that might be my business I'm coming out with. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I have to say, even with all the bad news that's been coming, all my friends, I just want to give a shout out to, like, all my friends that have lost people this week. My man Sean, Bevy Smith. Mm-hmm. Personally, we just lost an aunt, a great aunt. Those things bring our vibration down, but you also want to celebrate their lives. And the best way to do that is to enjoy what we have. Mm-hmm. And that's this time together. So, I want to give a big shout out to everybody. Thank you.
We definitely gotta give a shout out to Sean Malcolm.
All the way. That's my heart right there.
To Murph, Jermaine Hall, like all of them were, like, pivotal during
Dre, Andrew,
yeah, Roro, the whole team.
Yeah, that Rochelle trick.
Yeah. So listen, I mean, you guys know we'll continue the conversation just, like, on the phone. I love, you know, with my podcast, I really just like to make people feel like I'm inviting them into my living room to have a conversation with me and my friends. And I just, you know, after talking to each of you individually, I was like, I think that the four of us could have a really dope conversation that people might benefit from. There is a bunch of people who are wondering, is King Magazine going to come back for one last hurrah? Or, you know, the digital era basically killed off any chance of that. You know, only you guys know.
Let's do this.
Next year is the 20-year anniversary.
It's the 20th. All of us next say year. Next year is the 20th. So
next year is the 20th year anniversary?
Yeah.
Okay, so as it stands right now, let's say you guys put together a 20th year anniversary. Who would be the cover girl? I don't think it's going to be me. I am not fishing for that, okay? There's a bunch of people it could be.
Why can't it be you?
No. There's like newbies. Like, I would say
Stacey.
Maybe.
Back when Stacey was still down. Lauren, El Boogie, Shimmy. Yeah. Now, I'm gonna tell you something. I'm gonna tell you why it's likely. You know, Melissa will end up on this cover. You know, because we celebrate this 20-year anniversary. If we do it anything like we did our fifth year anniversary where we had five amazing cover girls. Just imagine if we did 20.
Oh my goodness. I think it would be something in the vein of that. And of course, Melissa was in that. That was a crazy
job. Hold on a second. Listen, I'm going to go on record. I'm pretty sure Dave's going to co-sign. You know what I'm saying? Come on, Melissa, don't front. Shaka's also going to co-sign. If there was ever a queen of King.
Facts.
Yeah. Yo, when you think about it, like.
Oh, the Seattle cell blocks.
Come on. Yo. Melissa had every era of King, when you think about it.
Come on.
You know, even the Women of King had every era.
Hey, this was crazy, though. So, you know, brothers in the joint don't throw nothing away. So I guarantee you, them covers are still popping in there right now. Like, real
talk. They got it.
They're probably mad sticky, too, but you know, that's a whole other story. I'm okay with that. I'm totally okay with that.
Brothers got to do what they got to do, you know what I mean?
I'm totally okay with that. Okay, so I thank you guys so much for doing this. This was such an indulgence for me. My mind is fed, my spirit is fed, my soul is fed. Thank you so much.
Thank y'all.
I'm so blessed to have you guys as friends. I am so
grateful. Me likewise with all of y'all.
I can't thank all of you enough for tuning in. This is gonna live on my page. Dave, I'm gonna send it to you to put on Vibe.
Please do.
Have it. Adele, you're gonna have it. Y'all do what you want with it. But anybody who missed it, you're gonna be able to watch it. If you didn't catch the live. So thank you all for joining. And that's that. I'm here for the food and Vibe Conversations. Bye, guys.
If you like our show and the content we're featuring, please hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, and just like your Uber driver asks, leave us a 5-star rating. Also, please leave us a review about your favorite part of the show or your number one takeaway from the episode. We read all the reviews, and this will only help us curate the content that you want to see and hear. Thanks, guys.